At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day Sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
This is a special report from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Welcome back to our continuing coverage in the trial of Scott Peterson, the Parkland School Resource Officer. We're up to segment number 2 of today. Let's go to the courtroom.
Okay, I'm going to go back on the record. This is State versus Scott Peterson, 197166 CF10A.
I continue to have Ms. Gomes, Mr. Killer, and Mr. Klinger present for the state. I continue to have Mr. Igarsh present with Mr. Peterson, who likewise is present. We are outside the presence of the jury. The witness remains on the witness stand. State, anything you need me to address before we resume your direct examination?
No.
Defense, anything you need me to address?
No, Your Honor.
Okay, please bring the jury back in. Want me to try to reset the annotator?
I think you could.
Ian showed me one trick, so okay. Let me see.
Circle anything, just so I know.
It's just when I hit that same annotator button, that's when we're getting the flash on half the screen.
All right, so we're finger pointing. I'll finger
entering.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Come on in. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Come on in. Once you're back in those same seats, you may be seated. All the parties may be seated. Ladies and gentlemen, those of you using the notepads, I'll give you a moment to get the notepads back out. All right, ladies and gentlemen, when we took our quick restroom break, we were in the middle of the direct examination of the witness. The witness remains on the witness stand under oath. We're going to resume at that point. Mr. Kilroy, when you are ready, you may proceed.
Thank you. Lieutenant Colonel, going to the next page of the active shooter from April 2016, I want to focus on this portion here where it says there are three desired outcomes for an active shooter. Can you just please explain what this means?
First option is to force the suspect to surrender. Second is to force the subject into a barricaded situation, such as SWAT will handle the situation since they are the tools and the tactics. And the third is to incapacitate the suspect by shooting him, stopping the threat, or the suspect shoots himself.
Do all three of these desired outcomes require action on the part of law enforcement?
Yes, it does.
Looking at the next page, focusing down here, can you please read this?
The majority of incidents were over in minutes. There is a need to get there fast.
Why?
Time is the essence. The longer you allow the shooter to stay active, the more lives will be lost. Therefore, responding as law enforcement, your mere presence, will force one of the three outcomes.
Going forward a few pages. This portion up here. What is a single deputy response? Why is that a consideration, a single deputy response?
Most active shooters, when it occurred, sometimes the first deputy on scene or officer on scene, you are the initial person to engage the threat. Your backup may be miles away or preoccupied with something else. So again, time's the essence. If you were to wait, as our predecessors did in Columbine, there's going to be a lot more lives being lost.
So in this portion here, if you could just please read that.
If you're in a scene or in the area and you hear gunshots, you should immediately assess what you have and prepare to respond. Remember, every time you hear a gunshot in an active shooter incident, you have to believe that's another victim being killed.
Now, do you see any language in that, in this lesson plan, in that portion, or frankly, any portion that says you must precisely know where the active shooter is?
There's no such thing, sir.
What do you mean there's no such thing?
You can never actually pinpoint. You go into intel, and you're using all your sensors. If you sat there to get the perfect picture at the perfect time, two or three minutes may elapse. Now you get a lot more problems. You got a lot more victims sitting here dying, bleeding out or dying in front of you.
And does that kind of go in with what it says down here? You can please read that.
Use your senses to gain a better perspective of the event. Move with speed and be decisive.
Is that what you were just telling the jury about?
Yes.
I'm going forward a few pages. Up at this portion, practice scenarios.
Okay. Yes.
What is a practice scenario?
It's a walkthrough of the scenario. We kind of brief the participants. This is what's going to happen. You give an overview. First of all, you give the PowerPoint. You give the lecture. This is what we expect of you. Then we walk you through so you won't go into it completely cold. Like, this is certain things going to happen. We don't give you all the ingredients of the cake or of the scenario, but a general idea. For instance, you're going to walk in this courtroom, you're going to have a seat, and then court is going to begin. I gave you the pre-knowledge of sitting down, walking in, and what to expect. Testimony from a witness, cross-examining from the attorneys. I'm prepping you, but I'm not going to tell you exactly what's going to transpire throughout the whole entire court process.
And to kind of highlight what you were saying before, you utilize exercises during this training, correct?
Yes.
Exercise 2, what is that labeled?
That was basically a practice for one deputy, solo response.
What was the scenario? What was the exercise?
In the stockade, there is this huge building. It's an exterior door. I'm trying to set the stage. A trainer standing outside the door. Matter of fact, if I could turn, this door behind me leads into a hallway. A train is going to stand right in front of the door. You're going to hear gunshots. I'm going to say, you, get in there and do something. As you go in, it's going to be sentry overload. You're going to see casings on the floor. You may hear shots being fired. As you look, you may see victims on the ground, or we have mannequins, and you will see an active shooter either commencing the shooting, dropping the gun, or holding a gun. And you have to respond based upon the stimuli you see at that particular moment.
This scenario, this exercise, was either created by or approved by you?
Yes.
Now, in the stockade, it's an enclosed area. When the gunshots go off, is there like a reverberation?
Yes.
Is there like an echo?
Huge echo.
Huge echo. So as part of this training to account for a, your words, huge echo.
Yes.
Get used to that. Is that part of the sensory overload?
That's it's a stimuli. Basically, to mimic as best as we can a open area, an airport, a courthouse, a school, a hospital, that you're going to hear gunshots, it's going to be echoing, but you can't just use one of your senses. You just can't use hearing, sight, smell.
Now, looking at the last pages here, do you see the sheet?
Yes.
What is that?
It's a sign-in sheet.
Is that used in training?
Yes, for every course you sign in.
And you see whose name is under number one?
Yes.
Who is it?
Scott Pearson.
Does the information from that sign-in sheet then input it onto the sheet?
Yes, the training completion form, the TCR you guys saw earlier with the instructors, the course, and the sign-in sheet goes into a folder with evaluations. It's then signed off by the sergeant, the lieutenant, the captain or major. Then it's given to one of our training specialists who inputs that information into the deputy's profile to provide record of the training being completed.
Now, going back to this sheet here. Looking at 22. Scott Pearson, handgun class in service, completed 513 of 15. Is that the same class that you testified to earlier?
Handgun class, yes.
Okay. Now looking at 11. Scott Pearson, school resource deputy, range refresher, completed 8/16 of 17.
I'll take your word on that if that comes to the dates.
Oh, sorry.
Okay. Yes.
You see it now?
Yes.
Okay. What is that class?
A specific qualifications or handgun class for school resource officers.
Why is that important, just for school resource officers?
It was additional training and help them to manipulate based upon shooting drills specific to operating in their job capacity.
Is that, what would that entail, like specifically the training?
Opposite of lesson plan.
Okay. So looking at the lesson plan. And the course objectives.
Okay.
Can you just read that for the jury?
First objective, accurately identify and articulate the 7 shooting fundamentals. Utilizing a live fire drill, deputies will demonstrate proficiency drawing their pistol from their holster without error. Utilizing a live fire drill, deputies will accurately shoot their pistol at a distance between 3 to 50 yards. Utilizing a live fire drill, deputies will correctly perform emergency reloads during live fire, exercised with the rifle. Utilizing a live fire drill, deputies will accurately shoot the rifle at 50 yards.
Why is this important specifically for a school resource officer?
This is important to transition. For example, a school resource officer shows up in a building, a school, and the active shooter be engaged in a gun battle. They may first have went to their handgun, shooting or transcend your rifle or vice versa. If you don't have a rifle, at least you understand the fundamentals of shooting with a handgun for precise shooting from 3 to 50 yards.
What do you mean by precise shooting?
Target acquisition, understanding the dynamics of gun. If you hold your firearm with a firm grip, and in the movies you see people close their eyes, in reality you're not going to close your eyes. Both eyes are going to be open when you shoot. You present your firearm, you look at the front sight, the rear sight of a firearm. A firearm has a rear sight, which is two metal pieces, and a front sight, which is one metal piece. During stress, shooting, the drills we're facilitating here, you focus on the front sight by a firm grip. Where your front sight is, that's where the round is going. If your shots are going off target, that means you better pay attention. Don't look at the suspect, look at your sights. That's where the round is going to go.
Lastly, on this sheet, do you see number 7?
Yes.
And what is that?
Patrol rifle refresher.
Completed on which date?
10/31/2017.
And that's the same rifle refresher that we discussed earlier.
Correct.
Now, I want to show you what's also in evidence as States 13. During the course of your employment as a for our sheriff's office, do you get certificates in things, the classes you take in, or different certifications in regards to your employment?
Yes.
Let me show you what's already in this 13. Do you see this?
Yes.
What is that?
A certificate of completion, basically, from Broward College. It's a CJIS course, Criminal Justice Standard Training, FDLE course, a structured, mandated curriculum to be a school resource officer.
And do you see whose name is on it?
Scott Peterson.
Do you see how many hours were taken?
Yes, 40 hours.
For a school resource officer?
Yes.
And what dates were that? Was that?
June 24th to June 28th, 1991.
I'm going to show you another one. When you attend classes, do you sometimes receive certificates of completion?
Correct.
Do you see this one?
Yes.
Florida Association of School Resource Officers, do you see who it's for?
Yes.
Do you see how many hours of training?
Yes.
Is it 24 hours of training?
24 hours.
And what date do you see?
22nd day of July, 2016.
I may have asked this, I apologize, but it's for Scott Peterson?
Yes.
Now, as you're in your current role, Lieutenant Colonel, that's pretty high up.
Yes.
How many levels are above?
One.
What is that?
Colonel.
And then above that is the?
Well, the sheriff is running for election, yes.
Okay. In your capacity of that, do you have to deal with contracts, things of that nature, paperwork associated with that?
You do. You see what's going on between the cities, the Broward County School Board, outside vendors. As a lieutenant colonel, I review what's going on in my districts or my regional majors present to me to review.
So you're familiar, for instance, with contracts that the sheriff's office signed with, you said it yourself, with the school board?
Correct.
Okay. Now, I'm not showing you what's already been entered into evidence as parts of States 13. I'll scroll out a little bit. Is this one of those types of contracts?
Yes.
Do you see the date?
Yes.
What date is that?
August 15, 2017.
And do you see the purpose?
Yes.
What is that?
School resource officer placed at the following schools in Parkland.
And down here. Can you read that line?
Two deputies to serve as SROs at two secondary schools, Westglade and Marjorie Stoneman Douglas.
Now, in this contract, I'm going to try to zoom in a little bit. Under 2.05, duties of an SRO. Under sub A, can you please read that?
The performance of law enforcement functions within the school setting.
What does that mean?
Everything you've been trained to do as a law enforcement applies to school. It doesn't change. Life, protection of life, preservation of life, investigating crime, stopping people getting assaulted.
Now looking at B, can you please read that?
for identification and prevention of juvenile delinquency, in parentheses, including substance abuse, through counseling and referral services.
Is that responsibility, as dictated in the contract, is that something unique to school resource officers?
That is job specific to school resource officers.
Meaning job specific, a regular road patrol deputy
would not perform those functions because as a school resource officer, it's a specialized unit in the Broward Sheriff's Office. So you're basically, your responsibility has certain requirements for expectations.
And including the identification and prevention of delinquency through counseling and referral services.
Yes.
So your typical road patrol deputy in Pompano isn't under contractual obligations to seek counseling or referral services for?
No, sir.
Can you please read C?
For enhancement of student knowledge of the law enforcement function and of the fundamental concept and structure of law.
What is that?
As a school resource officer, your job is to basically be like a liaison, help them understand the concept of law and the structure of law.
Is that job specific to a school resource officer?
Yes.
Using the same example of a road patrol deputy in Pompano.
That wouldn't be their primary job function now, sir.
And I just skipped over one thing at the top I just want to go through. Can you see the dates of the agreement?
Yes.
What is that?
August 14, 2017, and conclude on June 7, 2018.
So while this happened in Marjory Stoneman Douglas?
You're obligated to the conditions of the contract specified.
Okay. Now looking to the next page, D. Can you please read that for us?
Development of positive student concepts of the law enforcement community and promotion of positive interaction and enhanced relations between students and law enforcement officers.
Is this something job specific to a school resource officer?
Yes, the key word is students.
Once again, same example, Pompano Road Patrol.
That's not in your job purview.
Just in the job purview of a school resource officer.
Correct.
And there's specific training, as you highlighted before, just for school resource officers.
It's a specialized unit, therefore you have training specific to that job description or job position.
Okay. Now looking at E, can you please read that?
The provision of assistance and support for crime victims, including victims of abuse, identified in the school setting.
Is that job specific for an SRO?
Yes.
Is that because of the verbiage or the language school setting?
Correct.
Okay. Looking at F, can you please read that?
The presentation of educational programs concerning crime prevention and the rights, obligations, and responsibility of students as citizens.
What is that?
I mentioned earlier, I don't know if I could recall, two programs, such as DEAR and GREAT. DEAR is more drug-related and GREAT is more gang-related. These were specific programs entrusted upon school resource officers to educate and deter those kind of behaviors with our students in Broward County.
Road patrol deputy in Pompano, are they obligated or responsible to do such programs?
No, sir.
Looking at G, can you please read that?
The provision of assistance to school board of Broward County protection in protecting and securing the school plant and its occupants.
What does that mean?
Your primary function and duty in that particular line is the protection of the occupants in the school. So hypothetically, the school is your sole responsibility. Everything within that school compound boundaries is your job responsibility to protect and serve.
I want to talk about police vests. Are you wearing a vest today?
Yes, sir.
What kind of vest are you wearing?
Level 3 soft armor.
What does that mean, level 3?
It will stop a 9mm round, a 40, and a 45 caliber round.
Can you just explain to the jurors who don't know what's a 9, what's a 40?
A handgun. I'm wearing a handgun. So basically, it will stop a handgun round, not a rifle round. And when I mean stop, it's going to, if it struck me, it will do some damage. It will disperse the force, break some ribs, but hopefully it won't penetrate. This I'll be having some injuries, but it'll give me blunt trauma.
That's for handguns?
Correct.
How about for ammo?
You may.
Show the witness what's already in evidence as states 27. You see the shell casing there?
Yes.
Are you familiar with shell casings?
Yes.
Is something of that size shot from a handgun?
No, sir.
What's it shot from?
A rifle.
Would a shell casing for a bullet, the projectile that was originally in the shell casing. Would that bulletproof vest stop that?
No, it will not.
Your Honor, may I ask that witness to please stand for a moment?
Sure.
I'm going to ask about your gun belt. What is on your gun belt?
From left to right, a radio, a magazine pouch with magazines containing bullets. In between the magazine is a belt keeper to keep the outer belt in place. There's four of them. One, two in the front, two in the back. Pepper spray and my sidearm.
And you carry pepper spray, but do some officers carry asps?
Yes.
And what is an asp?
It's an expandable baton that's collapsible, a piece of metal that expands.
One more question going back to the training. The external school resource officer courses that weren't taught at Broward College, the SRO, are those refresher courses? Is that the purpose of them?
It's used as proficiency enhancement or basic continuing education. In the field of law enforcement, wherever you are, whatever specialty you're in, you continuously need to go to classes to get updates, as you would say. Like a school teacher, a lawyer, a doctor, we all have to get continuing education.
Now, going back to all the training, are deputies trained on the radio to use their radio, the police radio?
Yes.
How extensive is that training?
Well, from the onset, being in CIM right now, the former CIM, once you issue your radio, they explain to you how to change the channels, how to talk on radio. And upon graduation from the police academy, on the field training process, it's now 14 weeks, you use the radio every single day to get familiarity in communicating and understanding how the radio functions. So it's ongoing.
The training is ongoing to use the radio?
Yes, it's practical. I can explain to you how to use a radio, but the best form is, as a rookie, when you first start, is to have you start using the radio from day one.
And is there certain verbiage or certain words that are taught to be used over dispatch?
Yes.
For instance?
I could give my location right now if I needed to.
How would you do that?
I would say 11 Sierra.
And that's your number?
That's my call sign.
That's your unique call sign to you?
Yes.
Okay.
I am 97, which means I'm at Central Courthouse.
And at this time, I'd like to play for the witness what's already in evidence is States 7.
TVs have to be off.
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay. Court Deputy Eric, we need the TVs off, please.
Now, when teaching the read, do you use specific examples? You use cases that have already been, or incidents that have already been recorded over dispatch to teach the newer rookies or trainees the proper and improper way to utilize the radio?
Well, we actually evolved from that. We actually have you use your radio during scenarios to facilitate what you would say on the radio. And if you cannot use a code, because we speak in 10 codes, speak in plain language. I'm here, I'm at this location, this is what's going on. Let's speak, because sometimes during anxiety, you may use a code. If you don't, just use plain language.
All right, if you could please go to 223.26. In terms of the training, shots fired, possible shots fired, when are deputies trained to utilize those types of words?
When shots of active intel, shots are being fired at that particular location.
Now, is there a difference between shots fired and if the verbiage used or the words used and if you're being shot at?
Yes.
What are you trained to say if you're being shot at?
I'm taking live fire. I'm being shot at.
And why is that important, the differentiation between the two?
Shots being fired at someone shooting at something or someone. I'm taking fire like I'm actually engaged in a gunfight with an assailant.
And the second part of that dispatch, the 1200 building, is that something you're trained to do? Give the location of the shooting?
You're giving a location of what you believe of active intel. There's shots being fired. There's actually live shots being fired, currently being fired as you're standing there.
And you, if you're currently being fired, you give the location of the shots. Is that what you're trained to do?
Yes.
Aaron, if you can please go to 22414. Are you trained over dispatch or when you're using your radio to confirm where shots are coming from?
Yes.
Why?
Because it might someone might be stepping on you, basically, which I mean by stepping. Someone might key the radio up and it didn't get copied by the dispatcher, so you affirm it. And the second time you say it's like shots are being fired again. I've heard a barrage of shots being fired. I'm giving you an update. Hey, shots are still being fired at that particular location.
Is the specific language used in when you're on dispatch important?
Pretty much, yes.
Okay. If, Aaron, if you please go to 22424.
Any descriptions? I'm coming up from West Lake Middle.
We don't have any description yet. We just hear shots, but there appears to be shots fired.
Are they, or deputies trained to again say shots fired?
Yes.
Why is that?
There's shots being fired. There's active intel. Something's going on. Please step it up, which means response. I need help. Something's bad happening right now.
Now, going back to the question before, is there's a difference between shots fired and taking shots?
Correct.
Aaron, if you could please, if you could just play it for me.
Aaron, we're moving on the south side, over by the 700 building.
Angle storm shutting down east.
Did you hear when it's over by the 700 building?
It sounded like gunfire in the background.
Okay. And also over by the 700 building.
Right.
Okay. What, in terms of training, are you taught to say where your location is? Or are you taught in this situation to say where the shots are coming from? What is the primary thing you're supposed to be saying?
You're giving information on where the shots are actually being given, occurring at a time. The last thing you give is your location, unless you're taking fire. If you're taking fire, you explain, I'm being shot at, I'm taking live fire.
If you're taking fire, let's say sniper fire, is that something to be said over the radio?
Yes, I would.
Why? Why is that important?
It gives your responding officers and deputies intel, like the shooters from the elevator shooting at you, actively shooting at you from an elevated position.
So utilizing the word, for instance, sniper would be, you'd be trained to do that?
Correct.
Can you please go, Aaron, to 22556?
All right, 26, so we also heard it's over by inside the 1200 building. We're locking down the school right now. Make sure there's no pedestrian traffic anywhere on Holmberg Road.
Did you hear where he said inside the 1200?
Can you play it back again, please?
Sure. Can you play that again, please?
Did you hear that? By inside the 1200 building.
What do you do? What are you trained to do in that situation in terms of saying 1200 building?
As in what is aspect?
Is that another confirmation?
Yes, there's shots being fired in the 1200 building.
Now, in terms of training over dispatch, when you're repeating shots fired, are you trained that that means they're continuous shots being fired?
Every update means there's live fire occurring. There's not a lull. There's a lull in between, but there's still shots being fired. Every time I come on the radio, every time I key up, I'm saying shots being fired. I'm telling the dispatcher there's somebody still shooting at this particular location.
Aaron, if you could please play 22640. Once again, shots fired. Is that a confirmation? Are they trained that that means there's continuous shots being fired?
Yes.
Now, it says Juliet 3, we're going to Bravo. What is that?
You're going off the main channel to another channel, which is, well, the dispatch, the monitor, basically.
What's the main channel's called?
Main channel is a channel on right now, any officer, any deputy, any officer, where you're getting live updates, the dispatch is monitoring, all your resources are going to respond on main channel.
Is there a reason in this situation to go to Bravo channel?
You will not go to Bravo channel. Only units not addressing the current event. That's why she said if you're handling the situation, go to Bravo. Anyone involved in this situation will stay on main channel because everyone is coming on main channel.
Does that mean the first person on scene, first deputy on scene, should stay on main, not go to Bravo?
Everyone has to stay on main channel. There's active intel between the 12 and 300, the 13th building, 12 or 13. You're going to respond to the stimuli. We don't tell deputies to stage back. That's indicative of what they did in Columbine, waiting. We don't stage.
And why is it important to get there as fast as
possible? Lives are being lost.
Is there any training, not active shooting, any training where it's taught to stay back 500 feet?
That I facilitated? No.
That you've ever seen.
If you knew the size of like a bomb, probably, but that's about it.
You mentioned earlier auditory exclusion and tunnel vision. Can you just explain what auditory exclusion is?
Auditory exclusion. Your focus of your hearing is tuned out. You're so ingrained. For instance, let's say you're watching, in layman's terms, let's say you're watching a game, a football game, or the heat basketball game. You're so in tune, and someone's saying something, you're not paying attention to it because you're so focused on that particular object, time, and object in front of you. And when in the case of a critical incident, your senses, your hearing diminishes, but your sight on the particular target in front of you is your key focus. You actually start losing peripheral vision, your hearing's diminish, and you see what's unfolding in front of you.
Now, as part of your training, learn ways to, let's say, shake that off?
In the firearm classes, and the active killer, or even in the self-defense classes, we tell the basic, it's called tactical breathing. Take a deep breath, refocus. When we shoot the handgun classes, rifle classes, and we address the target, we're shooting the target, you get fixated on the target. So we'll say, hey, on the command of gun, you'll shoot 5 or 6 rounds. You shoot into the target. We take a breath, pause, scan. While you're scanning, I'm breaking my tunnel vision. I'm no longer fixated on that particular target. I'm looking around my surroundings to gather other intel. Maybe somebody else is moving peripherally, maybe I'm hearing something under the command. That's why we do it. We do it in the farm train, we do it in active field train, we do it in defensive tactics when we do hand-to-hand combat.
So different ways, just to recap, or you recap what you just said, what are the different ways to shape it all?
Take a deep breath. You take a deep breath and scan the area. Don't just look in one direction. Start looking. It's, some people say 360 awareness. It's actually more than that because you're looking around you, but you should also look up or look down because you might be walking into a manhole. You might get someone from a brick on your head. Look around. Shake it off. Don't just fixate on one specific point.
So scanning, for instance, east and west would be a way to shake it off.
Shake it off.
Now, in terms of training, if you're the first deputy that arrives on scene and you hear gunshots, what are you trained to do?
Address the threat. Move towards the gunshots.
In a situation where you don't move towards the gunshots and a second officer arrives, one with a more high-powered rifle, what are you trained to do in that situation?
We call it linking up. It's two of us now. Let's go. Let's do it.
What do you mean by that? Let's do it.
We're going to hunt. We have a contact team. We're going to find the shooter. We're going to find the stimuli and force an outcome.
Now, in terms of training or shots, how does it work in terms of whether a deputy hears shots or they hear, for instance, an SRO hears a fire alarm? What are they trained to do in either of those situations?
Address what's going on at a particular time. What's causing it? What's the causation of whatever's going on? Investigate it.
Now, once shots stop, what is trained? What are the deputies trained to do?
Gather some more intel. Move in. Try to get a bit of vantage point to see what's going on.
And is that going back to the training, using your senses?
Correct.
Why is that important?
Because if you move and try to get a better vantage point, your senses will kick in and you get more intel that you can relay over the radio to gather more resources or get more intel as to how we're going to handle the situation.
Would you do things such as check windows?
Yes.
Lieutenant Colonel, I'm showing you it's already been in evidence as states 16. You can show it. Yes, Your Honor. I apologize. Can you see that?
Yes.
Are these the type of windows that you would want to look into to gather intel?
Yes.
States 29. Do you see the door here?
Yes.
Are those the type of windows that you would want to look into to gather intelligence?
Yes.
What is round confirmation?
If someone is shooting, it's going to hit an object, a person. You could tell a general direction where the rounds are coming from. If someone's shooting at me, I would look to see if they're shooting, if there's gunshots around me, hitting a pole, a car, a person. If there's no wrong confirmation, more than likely no one is shooting at me. It's a sound.
And with that information, if there's no round confirmation, and you're still hearing shots fired, what are you trying to do?
See where the shots are coming from.
See where?
Seek it. Find it.
Fine. Now, going back to that rifle refresher class, in terms of copy to, I mean, to take this class, you have to have been issued a rifle, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So looking at... Number 7. Patrol rifle refresher. Halloween of 2017. With an SRO being issued a rifle in 2017, do you know where they were kept?
No. During that time period, you issue one, you purchase one. So more likely where the person, the deputy who has a rifle, they either have in the vehicle at that time.
Okay. So being in their vehicle, a rifle in a vehicle, how are deputies trained to keep rifles in their vehicles?
At that particular time, there were rifle racks. Okay. And the rifle rack is between the front seat, between the driver and the passenger seat, mounted against the cage in the unit. Or if they had a Pelican case in Clayton, they could have it secure in the trunk of the car.
Pelican case would be more like a lockbox?
Correct.
Now, in a situation where a deputy determines that they want their rifle in a situation like this, what are they trained to do?
As to what, obtaining their rifle?
Correct.
You go back to your vehicle, you get sling the rifle on, because the rifle is in a sling. That's one of the mandates. So you can free your hands up. Your rifle's from a sling, so you sling the rifle over you, and you could run with both hands, or you could transition to your handgun. You could go handgun, hands on the person.
Well, with that said, given the training on the tactical handgun, SROs are armed with a handgun.
Correct.
In terms of school resource of officers' responsibilities, are they the quote gatekeeper of the school?
Their primary job function is to protect the kids at the school.
And actually, let me just answer the second question. Now, the video audio that was played, you reviewed that in its entirety, correct?
Yes.
Now, in your experience, or based on your experience, based upon the training you've received, based upon the training that you've taught, the training that you've reviewed and approved, were the defendant's actions that day consistent with his training?
No, it was not.
Why not? What should it be?
Some type of proactive action.
What does that mean, proactive action?
Go towards the sound, investigate. That's expected. You're first in the scene, you gotta make a decision. It doesn't matter what position, rank, if I was here and shots are being fired and there's no way in the courtroom, I have a duty to act based upon my training for Broward Sheriff's Office to respond. We all train that way, to respond to stimuli, which is gunshots being fired, which entails that victims are dying, to do something.
The things that could have been done, does that include going into the building?
Yes, sir.
Does that include yelling out sheriff's office?
Anything to disrupt the OODA loop of the shooter.
So anything to distract the shooter?
Correct.
In any of the training that you reviewed, approved, been part of, or taught, were you ever trained to stay during an active shooting situation in the same spot for 48 minutes?
No, sir.
What is cover and concealment?
Cover and concealment is when you're taking live fire. If someone's actively shooting at you, you stand behind a column, a building. Cover would be something that could stop a round. Concealment would be against this wood partition. It's not going to stop a rifle round. If I'm taking rounds, I want something solid, an engine block, a concrete pole, something to slow a round down, basically.
How does that work in conjunction with an active shooter?
You seek cover if you're getting live fire. If not, you make movements towards the target or the threat.
And if you're taking live fire, you're trained to see what over dispatch?
I'm taking live fire, I'm being shot at.
And in a situation where you pair up with another officer, what are you trained to do in that situation?
When you pair up, you're seeking the threat. We have a technique called plate-to-plate, so it basically means go back-to-back. As I'm going down the hallway, if there's a door, I'm crossing a door, I am facing forward. My sole responsibility is looking forward. The secondary person, they will be on my arm with their firearm pointed at this door. So as I focus forward, they're crossing the door, addressing the threat. That's what it is, basically. We're clearing areas, open spaces.
Mr. Agar, take your time. What time we? We'll go to 12:30, then we'll pause. We'll break at that time.
Perfect. Thank you. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon.
Your Honor, the first thing I'd like to do is I'd like this witness declared an expert in training, police training, based on his experience.
Yeah,
I agree that you consider yourself to be an expert on BSO training policies and procedures, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And one of the things that you left out from your distinguished law enforcement career is that you actually went to college and you graduated, correct?
Yes, sir.
You got a degree in criminal justice, did you not?
Yes, sir.
And you attended the fine University of Northwestern, correct?
That's incorrect. Your depo on me, it was misprinted.
Oh, so what's the school? I'm sorry, it said Northwestern, right?
I know, sir.
But that's not?
No, sir. Your depo is actually incorrect.
All right, so where did you go to college?
Polk State, sir.
Okay, fair enough. So that was something the court reporter would have put down as
yes,
Northwestern.
Sir.
You never said Northwestern.
I said Northwestern as to executive management training.
I got it. Okay, so just a typo. It wasn't something I did, correct?
No, sir.
Okay, good. All right. Did you ever have the chance to speak with my client after the shooting?
No, sir.
What is a debriefing? What is that?
Debriefing is getting intel or asking the person who was involved in the incident information regarding the incident.
And when you conduct a debriefing, do you ask general questions or you try to be very specific?
Depending who's doing the debrief, they're going to ask a specific question based upon the incident at that particular time.
Because the idea is to find out very specifically what somebody is thinking, correct?
what they're thinking, what they saw, what they, whatever intel they got for that particular moment.
Right. It's kind of similar to when anyone of us as non-officers really want to find out details from somebody. You're asking, what happened next, what's the next thing you did, correct?
Pretty much, sir. Yes, sir.
All right. You are familiar with the Broward Sheriff's Office Department of Law Enforcement standard operating procedures involving an active shooter, correct?
At that point in time, yes, sir.
All right. And that's governed by 4.37, correct?
The chapter, yes.
All right. And you are familiar, are you not, with this? Let me just ask if I can approach. I've shown the state this already. It's Defense Exhibit H. If I can approach the witness, Your Honor?
Sure.
Okay. Just take a look at that and tell us if you're familiar with the content of the DSO active shooting policy that was in effect at the time of the shooting.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you. Let me just highlight some things. There is a... Your Honor, if I can have this.
That item is on evidence.
Does this fairly and accurately depict the active shooting policy that was in place during the shooting?
Yes, sir. Based upon the date at the bottom right-hand corner. Yes, sir.
Judge, we'd now like to publish this to the jury.
You want to move it into evidence?
Yes, sir.
State, any objection?
I do not.
All right, so without objection, defense H for identification will now be in evidence. That's Defense Exhibit 2.
Highlight 4.37.3. You're familiar with that section, correct?
Yes, sir.
And it has to do with debriefing, correct?
Correct.
And by the way, policies and procedures regarding active shooting, it's not suggestive, meaning it's not an option. They must be followed, correct?
Policies are guidelines, recommendation. Based on totality of circumstances, I personally would violate policy to save a life.
Okay. So regarding debriefing, it says here that the incident commander will be responsible for conducting a debriefing of all personnel involved in an active shooter situation in a timely manner, correct?
Correct.
It also says it's to learn the successes of the response and identify any needs for improvement, correct?
Yes, sir.
All right. So you weren't the incident commander, correct?
No, sir.
So whoever the incident commander was, they're responsible for investigating and speaking to those who were involved in an active shooting, correct?
Correct.
And it's to find out in detail what they were thinking in real time, correct?
Correct.
What they knew, what they saw, what they felt, correct?
Based on that event, yes, sir.
Because it's so important to know how to, in the future, change responses, correct?
Best practices, yes.
To improve best practices, correct?
Yes, sir.
And it also says in 4.37.3, under debriefing, subsection B, that the incident commander will complete an after-action report, correct?
Correct.
That's after the debriefing is done, after the people involved in an active shooter are spoken to in detail, an action after-action report is supposed to be completed, correct?
Yes, sir.
Are you aware of whether that was ever done in this particular case?
Not to my knowledge, sir.
Did you ever insist that anybody does a debriefing of my client?
At that particular time, it was not in my purview in the train division.
Okay, so just not your job, not under your...
Correct,
okay.
Sir.
Did you ever speak to any of the officers who were on the scene that day?
No, sir.
So you've never debriefed them to find out what their real-time intelligence was?
It's not until after it was an active investigation, so I was hands-off, officer.
So, for example, Deputy Kratz, did you ever speak with him about what
no,
he
sir.
Saw? You ever speak with Lieutenant DeVita?
No, sir.
Have you ever spoken to Officer Burton?
Coral Springs? No, sir.
Yes. What about Officer Best? You ever speak with these guys?
No, sir.
To understand what they were thinking, what they were feeling in real time?
No, sir.
Did you ever speak to any of the kids, for example, who exited the 700 building and who heard shots in real time to understand what they thought?
That would have been an investigative division, sir. It would not be in training, sir.
Okay. So the answer is no, correct?
Correct.
Did you speak with any other kids who were outside of other buildings during the fire drill to understand what they thought about the shots and where they thought those shots were coming from, sir?
No, sir.
Now, you talked about training at the stockade, correct?
Yes, sir.
First of all, we're talking about a building, right?
Yes.
From end to end, please give us an estimate of how large the building is, correct?
Probably 500 to 700 feet long or more.
500 to 700 feet long?
Yes, depending on this.
I'm horrible at math. How many yards is that?
Well, a yard is what? 3 feet? Let's see. I'm guesstimating. I haven't been in a while. Maybe almost a length of a football field, a little shorter.
Okay. That's the confines of what you're talking about. One building, and you're saying it's about footballish field. That building's that big?
Yes.
What you're saying? Okay. How many floors in the stockade?
One.
One. It's one floor building?
Yes, sir.
Okay. There are no neighboring buildings that you're utilizing. It's just a stockade, correct?
Correct.
And everybody knows that the shooter is going to be somewhere inside the stockade, correct?
Yes, sir.
And the issue is, okay, go in, and once you're in, knowing that there's a shooter in the stockade, go and find them, correct?
Correct.
Do you ever use any training mechanism where you're using multiple buildings as large as a stockade in addition to the stockade? Do you understand what I'm asking?
Yes.
Do you ever do training like that?
We did. We used schools. We've done Port Everglades.
Okay. And do you ever have a scenario where officers are on a scene and there's shots fired from somewhere that nobody knows and you have to go try to find in a multi 100-yard area where the shooter or shooters might be located?
Well, for safety reasons, first of all, we have to confine to a building.
I got it. That makes sense. It's also rare that you would ever, if ever, have a scenario where you have no real-time intelligence of where precisely the shooter's located over an area that spans multiple football fields, correct?
Well, Port Everglades, sir, it actually spans. We use multiple floors, and you follow the intel. The best we could do is simulate. The concept of active shooting is not building-specific. Your environment is going to dictate your tactics.
I understand that, sir. My question is regarding, first, we'll get to all that. I want to know whether you've ever trained in an area, and I'm showing you what is marked as Defense Exhibit F, okay?
Right.
If I can get close to the witness, Judge.
Sure.
Thank you, sir. A scenario.
Ms. Dragos.
Yeah.
Over on this side, sir.
Thank you.
No, sir. I can't have any jury box, and I can't have any witness.
Yeah.
Just right over here, sir. Just like we've done with every other person that's in the state's exhibit. Yeah. Go ahead, sir. If you would like the witness to step down.
If you could. Have you ever had a scenario where you have training in an area that is at least a football field, plus another football field, plus another building that's 73 yards long, plus about 20 yards of a courtyard area, plus another 73 yards long, plus another football field area. I guess we can add that up, but we're talking about multiple football fields, plus up north, up south, that would serve as the geographical area of where a shooter or shooter might be located. Have you ever had a training scenario like that?
And my answer would be no, because it's not feasible.
Got it. And I'm not blaming you. I'm just saying it's never been done, correct?
Well, on a larger scale.
I got you. You can have a seat.
With SWAT.
I got you. But now it's regular officers.
Correct.
Or a school resource officer, correct?
Correct.
Your scenarios deal with, you know there's a shooter inside of a building, so you just need to find where the shooter's located, correct?
Correct.
And you brought up Columbine. You brought that up when you were talking to the prosecutor, right?
Yes, sir.
Columbine, that school, there was a building, and the officers allegedly knew that the shooter was in the building, correct?
Yes.
And then they didn't go in, correct?
Correct.
So intel is everything, right? What you know in real time is critical, correct?
Yes, and you're supposed to seek it out. That's why
it's going to be. We're going to get there soon. But clearly, it's important to discern what somebody knows in real time, correct?
Correct.
And it's unfair to hold any of your deputies to what was found out after the fact, correct?
Objection, Your Honor. Sir, couple questions.
Yeah, that's sustained.
So one of the reasons why you have a debriefing is to know what somebody knows in real time as opposed to what they learn after the fact, correct?
Debriefings could be, it'll be after the fact. In this case, after what occurred, what could we do better? It actually said in the policy that you showed to me.
Correct. So in a debriefing, you find out what the person knew in real time, correct?
At that particular time, yes.
And what information was ever given to them in real time, correct?
Correct.
So for example, if officers are not getting real-time intel as to precisely where, which building a shooter or shooters may be located, you want to do better and fix that problem, correct?
Correct, but can you define real-time?
Well, what's your definition of real-time? So we're on the same page.
You're saying that officer, the person on scene is getting intel. The person on the scene is the intel because they're using their sensors to obtain information at that particular time.
Okay. They're also seeking out information from dispatch and other officers, correct?
Well, the dispatch can't give you, if you're the primary, the sole response, you're the first person on the scene, you are the intel. You are gathering the intel. You're relaying that intel to dispatch.
When other officers are arriving on scene, and let's say one officer is saying, shots fired by the football field, isn't that officer relaying intel?
They are.
Okay. So numerous people can relay intel to the dispatcher over the radio, correct?
Correct.
And then the dispatcher can then hear that information and then announce over the radio what they're hearing so other officers can hear it, correct?
Correct.
Having a radio that is functioning properly is critical when you're reacting and responding to an active shooting situation, correct?
Yes, sir.
You have firsthand knowledge of that radio system was a colossal failure to the BSL officers during the shooting. Isn't that correct?
Yes, sir.
And you didn't just learn that day. Those complaints had been coming in long before this active shooting scenario, correct?
That was my purview again. I'm training. I have nothing to do with ITD or communication, so I can't attest to what the radio transmission capabilities were at that particular time in the city of Parkland.
You knew those radios were a colossal failure before this day. Didn't you know that?
Sir, again, I would not know because I've never worked in the city of Parkland. I've worked downtown or in Central Broward, so I never had an issue with a radio.
But you would tell them that it is essential to have working, functional radios when you show up to an active shooting situation, correct?
I agree with that, sir.
It's also critical to have real-time intelligence from people, let's say, who are calling in to 911, correct?
Yes, sir.
Did you know that the 911 calls being made by frightened children inside that building went to Coral Springs and not to BSO?
Yes, sir.
You didn't know that?
After the fact.
You learned that, though?
Yes, sir, after the fact.
Whose idea was it to allow the 911 calls to go to Coral Springs and not go to BSO? Who made that decision policy-wise to begin with?
Sir, I don't follow your question.
You have learned, you said, that the 911 calls that people are making while they're inside the 1200 building, that went to Coral Springs and not to BSO officers like my client, correct? You already conceded that, right?
Okay.
Before the shooting date, who was responsible for creating a policy where those calls only went to Coral Springs and not to BSO?
Again, it wouldn't be my purview. I wouldn't know, sir, who made that policy. And just to let you know from personal experience, when I was a commander in Pompano, if someone was driving west on Southgate Boulevard, which is near the city of Coral Springs, their call gets relayed because of the cell tower to the city of Coral Springs, and then that call is transferred to the city of Pompano.
Right. But that's not what we're talking about here.
And again, it's not my purview to explain. I don't understand why
that's
the
fine.
Calls are up.
If you don't know, you can simply say you don't know, like you're doing. That's fine. Okay. Do you know whose responsibility, when you're on a scene, to ensure that the radios are patched?
Communications.
Okay. What human being, what person would have been responsible for ordering the radios to be patched so that the information that Carl Springs is getting will then be on BSO's radios?
That's, again, it's not my job purview. I'm not familiar with the communication radio system.
You are aware that the radios were never patched during that shooting, correct?
After the fact, sir.
You learned it after the fact?
Yes, sir.
But you would agree as a training officer with your history that when radios are not patched, that would greatly hinder my client who's trying to get real-time intelligence while he's on the scene. Yes or no?
It would help in getting real-time. Yes, you're right.
Now, you've stated correctly that if you know where sounds of gunfire are coming from, you move towards them, correct?
Yes, sir.
We can all agree that that's what you're trained to do.
Correct.
Okay. So let's assume that you get as close as you possibly can, but then you don't know where to go.
Okay?
And that the possibility of where you hear gunfire comes from is covering an area that literally represents hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of yards, correct?
Okay.
You understand that scenario?
Yes, sir.
You've listened to gunfire for 4 minutes and 15 seconds, and you still think it's anywhere in this area, correct, sir?
Yes, sir.
What are you trained to do, sir?
Start seeking out where the gunfire is coming from.
Okay. So, in a scenario like this, where any one of these scenarios could be equally plausible, where do you start?
Well, you start where you're standing. Process of elimination. Keep moving. Every time you hear a barrage of shots, that's more intel, and it's process of elimination of buildings.
Okay. So do you start, again, you say buildings. There's a parking lot to the right, which is equally in play, correct?
Correct.
And assume that it's the size of a football field. Do you just go to the right and start at the closest place, I guess, which would have been, the right would have been the parking lot. You're supposed to start there?
Well, you, depending on one sense, sir, there's a sense of sight and smell and observation.
Yeah.
And I believe in one of the videos I reviewed, I saw people fleeing out. So that's one you could use your sight, like it's a clue. If people are fleeing from a building, I would say to go to that building and try to find what's coming, what's called that stimuli to make people leave that building.
Did you just tell this jury that you saw a video showing kids leaving the 1200 building during the shooting?
I did not say that, sir.
Okay.
I said if you see someone running from a direction of a building,
well, sure,
you would assume, based upon your senses and your training that you will be replicating at the stockade, that's a good reference point to start that general facility.
Okay. So if kids are running out of the 700 building, for example, and running back in, should he run over to the 700 building?
Ask questions.
Okay. And assuming, by the way, that you believe that the area on campus is unsafe, and by that I mean that there could either be shooters, multiple shooters, wandering the campus shooting their guns, or potentially sniper fire from any of the neighboring areas. Isn't it prudent to make sure there's fewer kids and parents coming onto campus, especially when the school day just is about to get out?
Well, sir, based upon intel, are you seeing, you said sniper fire, are we seeing wrong confirmation? Are we seeing victims? Are we hearing gunshots? Are we seeing debris? It was said on the radio that the tape is displayed, I think several times, that it was in or beside the 1200 building. So that would be a great place to start.
Okay. So back to my question, okay? Assuming that my client believes that there's gunfire anywhere in this area so that there could be harm to parents and children who come onto the campus, isn't it prudent to do everything you can to keep the parents and kids off of the campus? Yes or no, sir?
No. Based upon the priority of lives, we just said it, contact team. If live intel is being shot, my first priority is to go towards the stimuli of shots being fired.
So the opposite would be true then. You believe that if my client thinks that there's shots being fired on campus and he doesn't know where they're coming from, to invite and have parents and kids come onto this campus? Is that what you're saying?
I'm not saying that, sir. I'm saying based upon the stimuli, shots being fired, your duty to respond, based upon training, is to seek the shooter out. There's additional units showing up. But the thing is, sir, I understand what you're saying. What I'm saying to you,
then
sir...
Then can you answer it, please?
I'm asking you a question. Should we stop the parents? No, seek the shooter. The parents are not being shot right now. We know people are being executed. We have to stop it.
Okay, back to my question, and just laser focused on whether parents and kids should be allowed to enter the campus when my client believes that there's a shooter or shooters that could place them in jeopardy. Don't you agree with me that it's best to keep them off of campus so they can be safe? Yes or no, sir?
Sir, again, no. Priority is the people who are being executed at that particular time. That's my object. That's my main focus.
Yeah, I understand that. It takes a couple of announcements on your radio to say, let's get the school locked down. Let's get it locked down so parents and kids don't come onto the campus. It takes seconds to do that. You don't think that that's consistent with your training? To keep people away so the scene doesn't become complicated and so the kids and parents aren't harmed?
You could transmit and move. That's been taught.
We'll talk about the movement. Again, we're focused on my client getting on there five times and saying, let's lock the campus down. Isn't that a prudent thing to do and consistent with training so that parents and kids don't get harmed as they come onto this campus, sir?
I don't object to ask and answer.
Yeah, that's the thing. In any event, Mr. Igarsh, we're going to press pause. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to pause the cross-examination at this point. I'm going to send you to lunch. Same admonition as always. Please don't discuss the facts of the case, the evidence, the witnesses, or the testimony amongst yourselves or anyone else. Until we reach the end of the case, I'll tell you when that is. I hope you have a nice lunch. You leave your notepads in your chairs. They'll be waiting for you when you come back. I'll see you back in the jury room at 1:50 p.m. 1:50 p.m. Have a nice lunch. Okay, we're outside the presence of the jury. Everyone can be seated. State, anything you need me to address before we recess for the lunch break?
No,
defense, anything you need me to address before we recess for the lunch break?
No, Your Honor. Thank you.
Okay, I hope you all have a good lunch. See everyone at 1:50 p.m. Sir, I'm going to see you back here at 1:50 p.m. You can talk to anyone you want about anything you want except your testimony in this case.
Yes, sir.
Like
yes, sir.
See you at 1:50 p.m.
All right,
and you can assign time sheets get to you.
That concludes segment number two in today's coverage of the trial of Scott Peterson. There is more to come. I'm Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.
This has been a special report from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.